the two topics we will discuss with you today. The first is the classification and measurement ED, which proposes changes to the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. And the second topic will be the impairment exposure draft we've published last week, just a brief overview of what those proposals are. And if you've got any initial questions, we can deal with those. Now, the classification and measurement ED, we had a preliminary discussion last year, June, at the joint GPF-CMAC meeting, where we talked about all of the proposals we are, that is, in the exposure draft at the moment. So today, all we are proposing to discuss is really the introduction of the fair value for other comprehensive income measurement category, and whether you think those proposals are appropriate, and whether you've got any comments on those. So the exposure draft doesn't really change the classification and measurement structure within IFRS 9, but what it does, it reaffirms the principles to be applied to the classification and measurement of financial assets. It clarifies how those principles should be applied, and then it proposes the introduction of this fair value for other comprehensive income category. Now, in the agenda paper 7, on page 2, we've included an illustration of how the classification and measurement of financial assets in IFRS 9 works, and the two main criteria it uses to do that is whether the contractual cash flows represent only payments of principal and interest, and the business model within which those assets are held. So what is the objective of management with those assets? Now, all the exposure draft does is it adds another question to the business model assessment. So the cash flow characteristic stays the same. You've got simple cash flows on a debt instrument. The business model is, instead of just a pure haul to collect model that you have for amortized cost, the fair value through OCI business model is the result of an objective. Let's say it's asset or liability management, or you've got interest rate management or liquidity risk, things like that, where the objective is something else, but it results in the assets being either hauled to collect the contractual cash flows and to sell for sale. So, for example, if you've got let's say you've got a portfolio of assets where you invest the assets to meet future capital needs, and the way you manage the assets is to maximize the yield or return on those assets. So an entity may decide to hold some assets to collect the contractual cash flows, or it can sell some of the other assets and then invest the cash in higher yielding assets. And in such a portfolio, the entity will, on an ongoing basis, decide what is going to give it the maximum yield, whether it is holding the assets to collect the cash flows or selling some of the instruments. So the question really is, why are we proposing this change to IFRS 9? And the basic answer is that we've received feedback that just having two business models is too limiting for some entities, whether it be corporates, whether it's bank or insurers. And especially in a case like I've just explained, sometimes it's not clear to see whether it's just a hold-to-collect business model. But if it's not hold-to-collect and you don't get amortized cost, is fair value information in isolation then the most appropriate information, or do you still need the amortized cost information? So the fair value through OCI measurement category we are proposing would give you both sets of information. So your profit and loss profile in the income statement would be similar to an amortized cost asset. So you will apply the same effective interest methods, and you will apply the same impairment methods. Whereas in the balance sheet, the assets will be reflected at fair value, and any other fair value changes, which is not related to the credit risk, will be presented in OCI. And that illustration is provided on page 4 of the agenda paper. And I think with that, we can go to the questions in the agenda paper. So question 1 asks whether you think it is appropriate to measure simple debt instruments at fair value through OCI, if they are held in such a mixed business model. Question 2 asks whether you think both amortized cost and fair value information is relevant for such a business model and should be presented in the primary statements. And then question 3 is just whether you think the application guidance we've included in the exposure draft is sufficient to distinguish an amortized cost business model from a fair value through other comprehensive income business model. And with that, I will hand over to you.
Yeah, Bob.
Understand this was intended as a limited scope, and I agree in particular with what you've done here. But what you're proposing here, in my opinion, really shows the inconsistency in the entire document now. And so, you know, I'm looking at the reason for fair value through OCI, and it is, as you know, talking about debt securities. It doesn't allow the entity to properly reflect their business model for managing some financial assets, sell others to achieve a targeted yield, sell their financial assets to reinvest in high-yielding financial assets, maximize the yield by selling and acquiring higher-yielding instruments. Totally agree with those, but what that really calls into question is the first two criteria, and especially that the basis of going into this is having contractual cash flow characteristics that are collection of principal and interest. And why is that? And I think you're inconsistent. And the issue is going to be equity securities and going through the income statement versus going into other comprehensive income. And if it's so important to show debt securities at fair value, but so important not to have them go to the income statement, why is not that the same reasoning used for equity securities? And what is so in particular about contractual cash flows and principal and interest on a theoretical level that would make those two different? And I'm kind of on a roll. I've been, you know, on a little bit of a roll. This thing is that, unfortunately, what I think it is who yells the loudest sometimes at getting results. And two, that maybe there's concern about the impairment model for other than temporary impaired equity securities. If it is, come out and tell us, because you're being inconsistent now. And I don't know, you may have an answer for me, you probably do, is that I don't understand at all, for consistency sake or theoretical sake, of why there's a contractual cash flow based on what you're doing now, and equity securities go through OCI. And I know you can have that in international standards now, but it's stuck there forever. It doesn't get recycled, you know, U.S. GAAP. I just don't understand it.
On your question around equity securities and why they are stuck in OCI and not recycled, is mainly because of impairment. So one of the main criteria, or one of the main criticisms in IAS 39 today, is the impairment of equity securities, and it's inconsistent from entity to entity, and there's not a lot of clarity as to how you calculate the impairment and when you need to calculate it. So when IFRS was originally published, equity securities, the default was fair value through profit or loss, but you could then make, you know, the election to present your other fair value or your fair value changes in OCI. But the understanding was that that will not be recycled because you don't impair equity securities. Whereas the debt securities we are talking about here are the ones where you've got simple cash flows. So and the only reason they are not in an amortized cost model or being measured at amortized cost is because there's too much selling going on to qualify for a pure hold-to-collect model. So under IFRS 9 today, these would be fair value through profit or loss. But the question is whether that's really appropriate because you've got such simple cash flows, which is akin to an amortized cost model or an amortized cost asset. But because of the selling, you know, you still need both sets of information.
My question, how simple the cash flow is, since we're going to talk next about impairment on debt securities, but anyways.
Yeah, so the simple cash flows is those that only have principal and interest, so it doesn't include any derivatives or embedded derivatives or any of those.
Brilliant.
I also felt when I read the exposure draft, and might be have been a wrong impression by my side, but I felt like a lack of theory, like Bob said. I mean, what drives the classification of an instrument as fair value through other comprehensive income? It's the fact that you have a business model, and you may sell that instrument. It is in a portfolio, and it may, in which it may be sold at some time in the future. But if you have cash flow characteristics that are not to collect principal plus interest, then it would not fit that category. I mean, theoretically, why? Why is that? Besides the equity instruments that Paul mentioned, I mean,
if you've got an instrument with cash flows that are not just, you know, the repayment of principal and interest, so there is something else. You've got an embedded derivative in there, or you've got your payments are linked to an equity indexed or something like that, then amortized cost and the use of the effective interest rate method is not going to work in such a, it's not built for such a model or for such cash flows. And that's why for amortized cost and fair value OCI, you can only have simple cash flows to work with an EIR model. And then otherwise, if you've got equity indexes or you've got embedded derivatives, fair value through P&L is the most appropriate information, and which is what you would have today when you bifurcate the embedded derivatives out of your instrument. The embedded derivative will go through P&L, and your instrument could be at amortized cost. But
just for instance, if I have a security and it's somehow leveraged, and then it wouldn't qualify for amortized cost, it should be fair value fair value for profit or loss. But I may sell that instrument in the future. It's in a portfolio that I manage in a way that I may sell the instrument in the future. But according to the ED, I could not classify that instrument as fair value through other comprehensive income, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And why? If the idea, what drives the classification through other comprehensive income? It's the fact that I may sell that in the future or something else?
It's both. It is your cash flows, yes. So the contractual cash flows on the instrument and the business model within which
it sells. Why does contractual cash flows matter? And you could say effective yield, but it may correct me wrong, is that effective yield is just a calculation for double entry bookkeeping that is the difference between the face amount and what you paid for it at its fair value. I can hear you. You're repeating the words to me. I guess it's more to the board members. You're repeating the words to us. It's fine. I know that you're limited, but where's the theory?
And something else. When I read the basis for conclusions, it said to reach convergence with US GAAP,
yes.
Convergence with the insurance project, and to produce more useful information. I mean, none of that explains exactly why the model, why the proposals, you know? I mean, I cannot verify the benefits that the information will produce to users. I mean, I don't have the ability to verify that. Convergence with US GAAP doesn't affect me. And convergence with the insurance project. I mean, that may be important, but I haven't, to tell the truth, I haven't been following that project as much as I should have. But
I think I'll say from my point of view, and purely, this is purely my personal view, is that you guys are pressing for a theory. There is a theory there, but I think the bigger issue here is, honestly, in my view, is to accommodate the insurance industry's view about volatility, the way I looked at it, the way I voted for it, and the convergence with the U.S. And we have been very upfront in mentioning those two very clearly.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. I guess it doesn't matter. What about my volatility? You know, we have $20 billion invested in equity securities, and we throw statistics in our comment letter about. You know, we had examples of our net income could be wiped out or could be tripled in a period with this. And so, you know, it's, I guess, I hate to say it, who yells the loudest in some of these circumstances. But.
And something else that I didn't understand conceptually. I mean, if you have an instrument that qualifies for fair value through other comprehensive income and it has exchange rate effects, I mean, the exchange rate should go to profit loss, even though they are not as realized as any other gains or losses that remain in other comprehensive income. I don't know if I'm clear.
Well, the treatment of foreign exchange gains or losses will be similar to what we've got today under IAS 39. So for the assets, from the assets perspective, foreign exchange will be based on the amortized cost of the asset, and that part will go through P&L. Mm-hmm. So it's similar to what we've got today. We haven't changed that.
Bob, can I ask a simple question to you?
I think can Kevin is waiting for a while, though.
Can we assume, you know, you support the proposal first, then you want to go further?
Mm-hmm.
I'm right?
Yep.
Yeah, the question, actually last week I was in China, and assume or follow your proposals, people will say that why you want change 39.
Yeah.
You agree?
I'm sorry, what's that?
And not necessary to change 39 at all in terms of basic framework.
I wouldn't disagree.
Okay.
You mean go back to 39?
No, classification measurement as there, okay, Nicholas, 39. But I think one of the criticisms that 39 got is that there is no principle for what it should be in fair value, OCI, amortized cost. At least some people believe, and I'll reserve my personal comments on that. I'll reserve my personal comments on is that there is a logic for when it qualifies as an OCI. It is a mandatory. It is not an option. So we have gone, but I don't know whether it has fallen to deaf ears, but that's something we need to hear from after the comment letters and need to rethink about it. Yes, Kevin.
Okay, I would introduce to say I hate to be a cynic, but in this one I don't. We started this afternoon
You hate to be a cynic or you hate not
time,
to be a cynic?
This time I'm going to be. We started this afternoon on a conceptual framework which says relevant to reliable information. We then went on to disclosure overload. I don't see the amendment to IFRS 7 that if I've got a business model of amortized cost, relevant to reliable fair value in terms of IFRS 7, not on. But you've still left the IFRS 7. I go amortized cost, but I've got to give fair value in IFRS 7 on the same thing. Can we get some balance here? If the business model says amortized cost, then fair value is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Yep. As Bob said, let's get some leadership. There's a balance here that even the ISB can come and say, if you're on this model, IFRS 7, no disclosure.
I do agree with that. And I thought the fair value to OCI was done because the instrument was held to be kept, and amortized cost makes sense in P&L. And because ESB wants to keep fair value in balance sheet because it is a financial instrument, so the OCI will be a way to satisfy the new market, I would say. But I was surprised to see that in the page 7, you said, for example, for insurance, they have a portfolio which is kept to get interest, and another one which is used to make trading, I would say. And I thought that the fact to mix between P&L at amortized cost and balance sheet at fair value was because you can use the same portfolio either to get cash flows from interest and either to choose to maximize the situation depending of the market, I would say. And because you have the double model, I would say, in the same package, you have a double recognition, one in balance sheet and one in P&L and one in OCI.
Yes, so that's why the fair value through OCI measurement is there, is because the assets are being managed within the portfolio to get something else. So you have this dual measurement going on, and that's why both sets of information is relevant. So your income statement gives you basically the effect of holding the assets to collect the contractual cash flows, whereas the balance sheet shows you the effect of the assets being available at any point for sale, so within this management.
And in that case, I would have understood that if the assets is sold, that you have a recycle.
Yes, you do.
Because you realize again at that
you
time.
You do. So for this, for the debt securities or the debt instruments, when the assets are being sold, the portion that sits in OCI, so all the accumulated fair value changes, will be recycled to P&L.
Understand that.
but not for equities.
But doesn't equity still have an effect on the shareholders? And isn't earnings per share a measurement of the return to shareholders? So why?
When IFRS 9 was first published, the reasons given for why equities are actually have to be measured at fair value through profit or loss, but given this presentation option in OCI, is because the equity investments for which this option is taken are the ones where those fair value changes does not matter. So it is, and if you remember back, the board tried to define which equity investments it would be, so this kind of strategic investment type thing, where you hold the investment not to realize the fair value gains or losses, but it is more from, you know, a pure operating subsidiary kind of view, where you just hold the assets or to belong to a stock exchange.
But the fair value of debt securities that go through OCI, that matters. Like, I'm just trying to pick up on your.
Yes, it matters because the idea is to get the same amortized or the same profit and loss as if it was measured at amortized cost. And to get there, you need to recycle your profit and loss at the end of the period so that you realize the same gain or loss in the P&L. As if that instrument was always carried at amortized cost.
I understand.
When you do political compromises, you lose a little bit of logic each time. Not too many, because then you lose too much logic.
I just sort of sit on the page that everything is relevant to the user, and therefore, ultimately, everything must go through earnings per share. Just conceptually, because that's how they... All the stock exchanges have a price-earnings ratio. The price-earnings ratio doesn't come back to OCI.
I'll tell you, though, I think you guys know this because we have been kicking around this for almost 4 years, that the equity. Some of us complained bitterly about the leaving it in the OCI. And like Rihanna just correctly said, the board was very much stung by the criticism, rightfully it got, on the financial instruments, complexity in financial instruments work that we got. I think having so many impairment models was very difficult, and developing an impairment model for equity persuaded the board to keep it there. The other issue is that this issue came from Japan, and they wanted to keep the strategic investments in OCI. They didn't want the volatility resulting with that, because they said we hold some investments for 40, 50 years.
But the Japanese argument was they never wanted them to ever hit net income. Was that? I'm surprised if that was the Japanese.
No. So the compromise was that we will let you put it in the OCI, but what we will do is that we will not develop an impairment model to it.
Yeah. Well.
Bob, honestly, there's no point in standing here and defending something. The truth is, this is the truth. Okay. The recycling happens even for OCI. If you really think about it, the recycling happens even for equity.
How's that?
Dividends declared.
When does that hit net income?
Yeah, the moment the dividend declared, you take it into net income. So if
dividend income received
from that investment is an income statement.
Well, that's like interest and principal.
Yeah.
Well, so we're gonna count the interest, but not the principal. Anyways,
that is the inconsistency there, and I'm here to point out.
I just want to say that given the insurance industry, what they wanted, since they bark so loud, is now re-strategizing us to try and bark very loud again, because we haven't barked loud enough yet. So not sure it's gonna work, but.
But I think
we've discussion at this table make what you've come up with makes it's just hard. I think it's hard with you guys in straight face to argue it, but that's why.
We're not arguing straight faced. We tell you. We don't hide.
Olivia. Just another advice from you. This option presentation in OCI, if this goes on, then all these preparers are willing to choose that option or ignore it in the future if the IFRS 9 is just going on. There's no amendment. So in equity investment, you just apply a fair value. By default, also goes to the P&L, but you can have an option to present the gains and losses in OCI. So in this option, in, under this option, are you going to choose any equity investment to be applied by this
the option,
CI present option? Yeah.
The option's incomplete. So I go to my management team and we invest in equities for a return. The reason we have equities is to balance our portfolio on a long-term basis. That's a business thing. And you didn't give me the option of recognizing an OCI with reconciliation. You've cut that off. So it's not much of an option. Recycling, yeah.
Sorry, reconciliation.
Oh, I'm sorry, recycling. I said reconciliation. We'll recycle, yeah.
So you would say without recycling, we're not choose.
No. Why? You know, why we? It's like we're, you know, you're not going to get any PE from a investment.
Very interesting, though. There are some PE firms, there are some investment entities in Australia that when I went 2 years ago, They chose against the volatility in the income statement, they chose to leave it in the OCI, and they said they will live with it because it will not interfere with their dividend declaration or anything like that, because those are still available when sold for the dividend declaration. And there are companies which are very keen to retain it in OCI. Of course, they would have preferred recycling, but in the absence of it, in your situation, what I'm hearing, Bob, is that you would bite the bullet and take it to the income statement. In the Australian case that I met and talked to, they said they will bite the bullet and put it in OCI.
Yeah, but you just repeating myself, but you conditioned your argument by in the absence of a proper option.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I think that was what Chenggu is asking, though. Chenggu's question was
TW. We will not take that option.
Yeah.
Is we invest 20 billion equities for a purpose, and we think we can actually make money on them, or we wouldn't invest in them. We'd like someday to see that go through the income statement, which it should. But it's all going to go through the income statement, mark to market, and just don't understand how that's different than a debt security, but that's where you are.
Well, there is one difference from a debt security, which is for a debt security, if you end up holding it to maturity, you know that what's in OCI will just reverse back out naturally, and that isn't the case with an equity.
Oh, so mine is, no. Would you say that's a substantive difference to have a different role?
I think we can take it offline, given the interest of time. Olivia?
Just a small thing, not exactly on the same subject, but as we are speaking about the way to get two presentation in the same financial standard, in the same financial statement, sorry. I would like to know if it will be possible once to change IFRS 5, because I think that the fact that IFRS 5 says as soon as you have decided to sell an asset, you should stop amortizing it. It is something that is completely not representing what the business is, because if you stop amortizing something that you are going to sell, and at the same time, you continue to use it, and you make a revenue with it. So you have the revenue, and you have no more amortization during that time. And it makes no sense.
But isn't it that you don't amortize, but you measure it?
No.
At fair value? What is the realizable value? Don't you need to do that? You stop amortizing, but you also, the measurement model changes.
When you have something that you are going to sell, fair value is the value that you are going to sell it, but when you are negotiating the fair value, you don't know what the fair value will be.
But you are supposed to update it,
so
based on
it's
that.
It's difficult to change the fair value every morning, I would say, because you do not know until you have signed it at the end. You do not know at what price it will be sold exactly.
I thought it's you're only changing the measurement model. You're not stopping anything. So I don't know how the practice works. Anything else you? No, you say continuous cost to sell minus. Yeah, go ahead, Leanne.
We can just quickly look at the last two questions. The one is just in this exposure draft, whether you agree with eliminating the phased implementation of IFRS 9. So once the final standard is being published, you can no longer choose to only adopt the early phases. You have to adopt the whole standard in its entirety early. Or you can make the option to choose the own credit requirements if you want without changing the measurement and recognition of your assets.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, I'm a little worried about what happens to the first-time adopter. For example, the date of our first IFRS
annual report is March 14th. And if the complete version of IFRS 9 is published, for example, in August 2013, that means 6 months passes on February 2014. So does that mean that we have to apply the complete IFRS 9, or we can apply the phased IFRS 9?
I just want to double check the wording, but I think what the wording says is the first reporting period starting after the 6 month period. So if your reporting period starts.
Starts.
Yeah. So your annual report, you're saying, is published on the 14th of March, for example.
Financial year end of March.
The end of March.
Japanese companies have March 31st year end. Yeah.
I know there is, we are looking at the first time adopters. So
you haven't seen that.
When we talked about the 6 month period, we did not have the first-time adopter specifically in mind, mm-hmm. and we are looking at how we can make it work for first-time adopters outside of the six-month period. So, and I think we've asked a specific question in the exposure draft on that to get some views.
I've seen that.
Yeah. And it is to make sure we don't miss or we create unnecessary problems for them.
We're submitting.
No, it is not our intention to make the first-time adopters to adopt IAS 39 and then IFRS 9 because of the six-month issue.
Right. We don't want that.
Yeah, and we don't want it either.
Okay.
Yeah. Hiroshi?
Yeah. Same comment. That the six-month rule is not friendly to first-time adopters because the time frame of the completion of the impairment project is unknown.
Yes.
So you should give much consideration to first-time adopters.
Yes. Yeah, we will do that.
In the interest of time, do you want to touch on impairment, or because many people have to catch their planes? And
I think it's up to you whether we do that or not.
What do you guys think about it?
Take a lot of time.
Okay. I think you heard the most relevant on the classification measurement, which is end of this month. There is some time between now and the impairment deadline, July 5th, so we have one more opportunity to meet this group in June. So perhaps we will flip it at that time and talk impairment first and come to classification.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Rihanna. With that, I think we will close the formal session. Thank you. Thank you.